Anyway, one person who doesn't need Virgin Galactic's help to get out into space is Doctor Who. First broadcast in 1963, Doctor Who's been capturing the imagination for decades. But is it all just fiction? Dr. Paul Parsons thinks not, as Ben found out.
I'm here at the Science Festival with Dr. Paul Parsons, author of The Science of Doctor Who. Now, is there really any science in Doctor Who, or is it more fiction?
Well, actually, there's a surprising amount of science in Doctor Who. Not just the obvious topics like regeneration and spaceflight and things like that. You know, there are actual real sonic screwdrivers being used in modern factories. There are protective shields for tanks that are being developed, which can dissolve projectiles just like the Daleks did back in the first relaunch series. There's all kinds of things going on. And I was just staggered when I started ringing up scientists and finding out this kind of thing, you know, because I thought it was going to be quite a limited amount of stuff that I could talk about. I was literally blown away by how much there is out there.
So if we're using sonic screwdrivers now, is that a case of art influencing science?
I don't think they were already in action when we started including them in science fiction. They probably didn't result from science fiction. You know, I think this is just something that people have developed. I mean, I say sonic screwdrivers, they're kind of sonic tools. They use sound energy for soldering electrical components in place and that kind of thing. And you can use them for cutting fabrics and that sort of stuff, you know, these little sonic beams. To actually make something with as much oomph as the Doctor's sonic screwdriver would probably be a lot harder, you know. Back in the old series, he kind of blows up landmines with the sonic screwdriver from a distance of about 20 metres. Getting something powerful enough to do that, he'd probably need a nuclear generator, which is, you know, more than Tom Baker could probably fit in his pockets. So probably a little way to go until you can have a real practical sonic screwdriver like we see in Doctor Who. But, you know, the basic sorts of things are being used. Yeah, sure.
And surely the laws of physics don't let us have something like a TARDIS where it's actually bigger inside than it is on the outside.
It's something you can do in principle, actually. There was a guy back in the late 90s came up with a way of arranging this special kind of material. He calls it exotic matter because it's actually got negative pressure, which means that if you blow up your car tyres with the stuff, they actually get flatter, which is quite bizarre in itself. This chap, Chris Vandenbroek, at the University of Cardiff, figured out a way of arranging exotic matter in just the right way that it would actually bend space and time into this bubble, which was actually bigger inside than it was on the outside. The trouble is you'd need probably about 10 million billion kilograms of exotic matter to do this, which is about the size of a medium-sized asteroid. So it's not something we're going to do anytime soon, but it's possible in principle.
So if these things were to be possible, what would be the one thing from Doctor Who that you would like to see in common use?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, time travel would be good, but it's probably maybe a bit obvious. So maybe one thing that I'd like... There was an episode of Doctor Who called Nightmare in Eden, where there was this machine which was kind of like a virtual safari park where it could, like, capture locations from all around the universe and then project them, but project them as a hologram so you could actually go in and walk around. So you could visit places virtually, if you like, and without having to get on planes and pollute the environment and all that kind of thing. So I think I'd have one of them.
It does sound like a very good way to cut down on your carbon footprint.
Absolutely, yeah. See, Doctor Who even had the carbon footprint licked. How clever is that?
Also at the Science Festival is the editor of Materials Today, Jonathan Wood. Now, what have geckos, spiders, sharks and daffodils got to do with materials?
Well, I thought that was a good question too. But it turns out that all of those things have come up with amazing engineering solutions that we can learn from and make new materials for ourselves. So, for example, a shark has got dimples on its skin that breaks up the flow of water over its skin, reducing the drag so it uses less energy. And Speedo reckons it can make better swimsuits, making its swimmers go faster using something similar.
So should we expect to see Olympic athletes in shark suits?
Well, the all-in-one body suits that make them look so high-tech now, they are based on what Speedo's learnt from sharks. Now, we can argue whether they actually achieve all that Speedo says or not. Certainly, there doesn't appear to be the change in world records that you might have expected if it really worked. But it's interesting science, nonetheless.
I guess in Olympic sports, it's the tenths and hundredths of a second that make a difference.
Absolutely. A tenth or a hundredth of a second is going to mean the difference between a medal. So even if it helps just a little bit, even if you can't quite show it by science, that's going to matter totally to the swimmer.
And with daffodils, they've inspired some beautiful paintings, some lovely poetry, but how have they inspired science?
Well, daffodils are interesting. When the wind blows, a daffodil doesn't bend over like a tulip might. Instead, it twists and turns its head out of the wind. So it's got this strength in the stem, but it's also inbuilt this type of flexibility that allows it to twist and keep its head up in the wind. But we tend to want to do something different. When we build something strong, we want it to be stiff. So that's an example of where nature's done something different, because it's got different priorities than we do.
And so what do geckos have to do with Spider-Man?
Geckos are amazing at sticking. They can scurry up the smoothest wall without even a second thought. And the way they do it is by having hundreds of thousands of tiny hairs on their toes. And these hairs make use of a tiny sticky force called the Van de Waals force. And it's tiny on one hair, but if you add it up over the hundreds of thousands of hairs, it's really sticky. So they can cling to walls like Spider-Man did, but they can hold their weight maybe 50 to 100 times over. It's a remarkable thing.
And have we developed the technology based on this effect?
We can now make materials that are hairy, much like a gecko's foot. If you create, say, a plastic film with lots of plastic fibres sticking out of it, and you make them close enough, you can make something that sticks purely through Van der Waals forces. We're not as good as a gecko yet, but we may be able to scale the Empire State Building soon.
And also at the festival is extreme scientist Dr. Basil Singer. Hi.
Hello, how's it going?
Very good, thank you. And you?
Very good. This is an amazing event this year. You've got so many people here. It's the most packed out I've ever seen it. Carol Vorderman is on form. And what's more, you've got the science of Doctor Who and Q's. I can't get in. I'd really like to go and see it. But Q's are all the way out the door, around the building and up the block. It's proved to be a massive hit.
Well, your own event was on the science of skateboarding and extreme sports, and that also had queues pretty much down to the river. And to be honest, it's the only science show I've seen where you had five kids on stage on skateboards. What inspired you to use skateboards to demonstrate physics?
Why not, you know? I mean, mechanics, essentially, can be taught as such a dry subject. It's just the physics of motion. And what better way to use analogies than through extreme sports to try and describe those physics of motions and the dynamics that occurs when you're doing some cool sports.
And do you find that people get distracted by the fact that there are skateboards around, or do people take the physics in?
I'd like to think that the kids take the physics in. I've talked to parents after the event before, and the parents have come up to me and said, I don't think you really got this idea across because I was distracted by this and that. And their children have said, what are you talking about? Angular momentum, I totally get it. I totally understand moment of inertia now and why I speed up when I bring my hands in, when I'm spinning. And the kids just really do, I hope anyway, relate to what I'm saying.
Well, other than snowboarding live on stage and bringing your own snow dome, what do you think you'll do next? What's the next good way to demonstrate physics to kids?
Oh, that's a very, very good question. I think I'm going to continue doing this physics of extreme sports lecture, because it's a great way to explain mechanics. I'd also like to branch out into sound, music. How does sound travel through the air? How do different instruments make those different sounds? And I could bring in a guitar, do a massive rock riff, or I could bring in my drums and have a mash away at the drum kit. I think that could be really interesting.
Well, I look forward to seeing what happens in the future. Dr. Basil Singer, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
The Naked Scientist Podcast, brought to you by thenakedscientist.com.